Hi everyone, welcome to the Precious Pioneer audio experience. Kindness never goes out of style. Let's do something great today.
Precious, thank you very much for coming on to my podcast. It's great to have a fellow podcaster on here. Where are you calling in from? I was trying to find out where you were located, but I didn't see it in the profile.
So I'm actually located in Dover, Delaware right now.
Oh, not too far away. I'm right up in New Jersey.
Okay, cool. What part?
I am in South Jersey, so right outside of Philadelphia, not too far at all.
Okay, cool. I used to live in New Jersey, around McGuire Air Force Base.
Just north of here, not too far.
Okay, yeah.
So I had a question. You mentioned that you were a Division I athlete.
I was. So I was a track athlete in college, and I had graduated just last year.
Okay, so that leads to a question I ask all the athletes I've had on here. So you graduated last year. It's still a little bit fresh. I'm a former athlete myself coming off. I'm a few years removed now. You're just removed from it now. Has it been an issue to, you know, fill that void that athletics had for so long? Are you still competing in anything? And if not, is it tough to step away?
Most definitely. So I actually ended my D1 athlete career quite early. I only competed my freshman and sophomore year and a little bit of my junior year. I am a javelin thrower. And so I had actually turned my, I tore my ACL. And then as soon as I had a year of rehab, my first meet back, I tore another ligament in the same knee.
Oh my gosh.
So it just came. Yeah, so it just came to a point where, you know, I knew that I wasn't going to be a competitive Olympian. So I had to just step away and figure out something else. But I think with talking to my other track friends and other people who did sports, and then my own testimony as well, I think that there is this void. Because I don't think people truly understand what it means to be just an athlete in general. Mm-hmm. It takes up hours of your day. You have to get up for 7 a.m. practices. You go in later in the afternoon for weightlifting. You think about the food that you need to eat and certain how much sleep you need to get. And all these other things revolve around your practice time and your fitness level and all these different things. And so to have that commitment suddenly kind of gone, it's like this ridiculous amount of time that you're like, wow, like what do I do now?
Exactly.
You know? Yep. And it's very interesting, that transition, because at first I think everybody goes through this sort of depression. I don't know if it's like, it's not necessarily super intense. It's kind of just like a sense, like an emptiness, you know, like, because it did pick up, it was like your whole life and you trained to that, to get to that moment. And now the moment passed, you know, and so now you have to figure out what exactly do you want to do. And I think some people go in that same fitness direction and like, okay, well, I'm still going to work out and go to the gym or train, because you go from lifting as heavy as you can to, you know, be a prime athlete to suddenly, you know, like, do I have to go to the gym today? You know, like, it's like this weird transition. Yeah. And then my mom told me about like how, when she was in college, she was a roommate with a girl who was in track. And after they graduated, you know, she like transitioned, like she, you know, just didn't stop working out completely, you know, and gained a lot of weight and had to figure out how to go back to running, because it's like, you could either go the opposite path of just, well, now I have a break and now I don't have to do anything. You know, it's this weird balance.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm sorry that your career had to end due to injury. That's never any fun. I actually had the same situation. I was a rugby player. I played overseas for a bit, and then I got a really bad concussion, and it was kind of the same thing. I tried to come back. I started training, and then I'd get headaches, and I realized, you know what? I think I think that might be it for me. And you described the whole transition process perfectly. It's not like an immediate, oh, what do I do now? It's just, it starts to creep in like, oh, wow, I have all this, my life used to revolve around this one thing. And that thing is gone now. And you slowly try to incorporate other things to fill that void, but it's tough. I feel like I'm still, in many ways, I feel like I'm still trying to fill that void. And that's kind of what the whole podcast idea, that's how that came to me, because I was trying with so many different things. And then I thought, you know what, let me just share these ideas with other people and that might help. And it certainly has. And I wanted to ask you about that in terms of your podcast, because I saw you've been doing it for over a year now, and you have so many episodes. You've covered so many great topics. And I should probably lead off by letting you explain the podcast a little bit, but I wanted to ask you if that has helped in any way, not necessarily just in sports, but in life. Has the podcast expanded you in any way?
Yeah, most definitely. So I have a podcast called Precious the Foodie. And originally, it started off, I always knew that I wanted to be a chef in some shape of the word in my career. And I knew that in college. And while I was in college, I actually had a house. I rented a house. And so I had the opportunity to have my own vegetable garden, and I had a couple of fruit trees. It was really amazing.
Wow.
But yep. I noticed that when I threw like house parties, you know, for the college life or whatever, and my friends would come over, they're like, oh, what is this? Like, what are these herbs? And like, what is this for? Because I had like all kinds of stuff, like oregano, basil, like four different types, like all kinds of stuff, because that's what I'm really passionate about. And so I would explain it to them, and I'd have them like touch it and try it. And then I'd cook meals, and they just asked me all of these questions. And I'm like, you know what? Like, I seem to know like a decent amount about just general things. Why don't I start like the podcast show to answer these generic questions that most people have? Yeah. And I'll just answer it on the show. And
Great. I love it. You knew your passion.
Yeah, it worked out for a little bit, for a couple of months. And then I realized that, like, even though I enjoyed it, like, it's very difficult to talk about, like, I don't know, the seven different types of grains of rice, you know, even though I think that's really interesting, it may not be interesting to a generic audience. And it's very difficult. And then most people don't care, you know, white and brown rice, or sometimes jasmine is like good for most people, you know. Yeah. But that's just one example. And so I'm like, you know what, like, I think that like, everyone eats food and most people enjoy it. However, I really love food on the grander spectrum of what it actually means. So like, whether that be on the cultural side of your heritage or where, based on where you're from, also people have a different relationship with food in relation to obesity rates and dieting culture. And for us, like, we would know, like, athletes, the necessary mm-hmm. like to consume all this protein and like all this pseudoscience, but also there's like legitimate science, and it's just so hard to like navigate through all of that. And so I really wanted to talk about serious issues through the medium of food, because I think everybody has their a unique journey, background, story to tell. But I think I find that when people talk about their childhood meal that their mom cooked, or something that reminds them of home and centers them, I find that it makes it a lot more relatable. So when my friend Partha, who's from India, and he was talking about how his mom made a rice dish with vegetables and stews and things like that, that's far more interesting than me just talking about it for an hour, you know?
Sure.
So I kind of think I grew into that space. And so you asked me if if I learned anything creating this podcast show. I think I really fell in love with storytelling and really connecting with other people. And especially during this time with the coronavirus, you know, we're so isolated and, you know, in our own areas right now inside of our homes. And it's very humbling and very reassuring being able to talk to all of these people all over the world, and they kind of have this same sort of feeling, you know?
Yeah.
And makes it makes us feel kind of more whole.
Yeah, I think my wife and I have, we've rediscovered our, we used to cook all together all the time and we kind of lost it for a while, but through the quarantine, we kind of rediscovered that. It's been one of the great benefits for us actually is to get that back. And as you mentioned, some food kind of gives people that connection to home. I couldn't agree more because my wife and I, we were living out in California for a few years. And then we moved back home last year, and it's just been, you forget how much food means to you. Like the food from home, unfortunately for us, it's cheesesteaks and pizza and all the bad food that New Jersey and Philadelphia have to offer. But there really is some kind of crazy connection to that food you grew up with. I don't know what it is, but I couldn't agree more with that. You know? Yeah.
It's something, because I think it's deeper than that, you know, it's like a labor of love. So for me, like when I think of a really good dish, I think of Thanksgiving and how my grandmother always made like the best mac and cheese and stuff like that. It's like attached to a memory. And that's what I just really love about food in general. I love that experience working in restaurants, you know, like people come to celebrate their birthdays, anniversaries, all kinds of stuff. And, you know, it's like you're a piece of that memory, you know?
Yeah. And every holiday you get together with your family, you know, there's going to be those foods there. You look forward to it for months beforehand, for me anyway.
Exactly.
Has cooking always been, as far as far back as you can remember, have you enjoyed the cooking aspect of it?
So, it's definitely changed and evolved over time. Like I used to, looking back now, it's kind of a little bit of a joke, but like when I was younger, like second grade, you know, they always ask you like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I told people like stone face, like, you know, I want to work at Red Lobster. Like that was my dream job.
And, I love it.
But obviously as I got a little bit older, I grew up watching, Food Network and TLC, and I really loved Cake Boss, and I'm like, you know what, like I love art, let me be a pastry chef, like that's super cool to build those like really intricate cakes, you know, out of anything. And I thought that was super cool. And then it wasn't until I got to college, and for some reason I wanted to try being vegan for like 3 months or something like that. And so I really had to be innovative on how to cook. And I wasn't really interested in culinary until that moment. And I'm like, you know what, culinary is actually kind of cool too. And so now I just, even though I specialize in baking and pastries, like I make really, like my favorite thing to make is breads and cakes and pies and stuff. Like now I really love the culinary aspect. And so I would say I'm fairly new to culinary in general, but I think I learn a little bit more each day. So that's my favorite part.
Well, if you're calling yourself fairly new, there's no hope for me, because I was looking through your Instagram and saw some of the stuff you make, and it looks amazing. And I've been trying to cook for, it seems like forever, and I'll have the occasional like meal or cake or something that turns out okay, or maybe even good, but there's just so many duds in there. I can't really nail it down. So I wanted to ask you, on the topic of, you know, my podcast, trying to get incrementally better at things, what are some of the strategies you use to get better at, you know, baking, cooking, all of it, like to be a better consistent cook? Cause my wife and I will cook. She's much better than me, but it's something I really would like to improve on, and I just can't seem to do it.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so when I think of cooking and baking, so baking is all chemistry. So when it says 1 teaspoon, it means 1 teaspoon, not like a teeny tiny bit more. No, like what you have to like measure it out to the grain of sugar. Like it literally has to be like that. And it's so tedious.
That makes sense.
That's why a lot of people really don't like baking. However, once it turns out beautiful, you know. So baking, if you need something to get your mind off things and to really focus, I recommend baking. Baking's so great for that. Cooking, however, is about attentiveness and tasting and paying attention. So it's like building throughout. And so what I recommend, actually starting back to what you mentioned before, how you said that like some people are at different levels than others. I recently discovered, you know, like there's a difference between being a chef and cooking all these elaborate, beautiful meals every single day. Mm-hmm. And there's a difference between that and being a home cook. And so being a home cook is enjoying the simple things that you enjoy. And it doesn't have to be the most beautiful, immaculate. It just has to taste good. And it can be really easy. And so I recently discovered that, and it takes away this pressure to make everything absolutely perfect every time, because it's just for you and your wife to enjoy. Yeah. And when you realize that, it can be as simple as a really great stew that you enjoy. It could be something as simple as avocado toast with some salt. It can be as simple as that, you know? Yeah. So I think understanding that really can take away the pressure.
That something does help, because there's a lot of things I can cook. Avocado toast I can do.
That's another thing. So, something that I always recommend is to try out a new recipe. And it may seem like a lot at first, but to learn how to cook, you have to just try out a recipe that you think is interesting. And then once you know how to make it, you can alter it how you enjoy it. So that an example would be like spaghetti. I think that's pretty basic, you know, like a meat sauce, yeah. And you can even get it from a jar, noodles, whatever. But let's say you like garlic, you know, or you like oregano, or you like basil. You can add a little bit of that in there, or you can add a little bit of chilies because you're like, your food's spicier. It's like thinking about all those different things that you like and personalizing it. But you can do that with a chicken parmesan, or you can do that with a lasagna, you know, so it's finding that really good balance, knowing how to do something really well, and then identifying flavors to make it your own. And something that I really recommend. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. You finish.
I was going to say, like, if one show that I really fell in love with, like, I know a lot of people have Netflix right now and have been binging since quarantine. But there's this show called Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat by Samin Nosrat. She's absolutely amazing. Her energy will just make you laugh, I think. And there's four episodes, and she gives you a really thorough breakdown of the simplicity of cooking really great food. And so if you're just getting started, I recommend watching The Hour, and you'll learn so much just from watching that, I think.
I will definitely check that one out. And I do your whole method is great, because I actually have, it makes sense. I have this one recipe that I cook really well. It's a chili recipe, and I have it written down, and then I'll try different things. And if I like it, I'll alter the recipe. If not, I'll stick to the original. And I've just been altering it every time I go. And if I could eat chili every night, I'd be a great chef, but my wife unfortunately would not like that. And I also I like the good crock pot meal, because you just throw everything in there and let it cook for a while. Mm-hmm. But you can only do that so often as much. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that's so good that you're doing that. You know, I think to be a better cook, you know, like with anything, with any sort of training, just make an intentional effort. Like, let's say one meal a week, we'll try something new, and you know, it could be a fun thing. And if it flops, you'll know what you did wrong. And then you could just try again, you know? So it's a little bit, you have to make it like fun, you know, no pressure.
Yeah. I thought that a minute ago when you said that, I thought, you know what I'm going to add to my routine is one, my wife and I will cook one new recipe a week, and that's manageable. That's very doable. That is something I'm definitely going to add to my unmotivated habits philosophy. So I want to thank you for that. That's definitely something we're going to try. My wife actually said, can you ask her if she'll get on a video call with us and walk us through a recipe? So maybe that could be a future episode as well. She would love that.
Yeah, I love that. Anytime. That'd be great.
I wanted to ask you about one of your Instagram posts, which is kind of unrelated. I'm not sure when it was. I was just looking back through it, but it was a post that said, loving my new morning routine. And I saw a book with some notes in it and a coffee, and it looks like a donut in there. Can you explain that morning routine, and are you still doing it?
No. unfortunately, I think it was a moment. Over the past few months, I've definitely been, my morning routine always changes because I needed something that was productive, but then also like something that I enjoyed. And I found myself, I feel like with many people, I wake up and I scroll through Instagram for like 2 hours and then I'm like, oh, okay, let me go make my cup of coffee. And I felt like my morning was just taking too long because then it'd be noon. And I'm like, oh, well, I haven't done much yet. And so I think my incentive is I used to work at Dunkin' as like a side job to make some extra money because I'm going to culinary school soon. And so I'm like, you know what, let me just bring home a half dozen donuts. And then so I have something to look forward to as soon as I get up. Like I'll have a donut, a cup of coffee, I'll get my morning reading done because I've been trying to clear a lot more books lately. And I'm like, okay, chapter done, cup of coffee, and a donut. Like I think that's a really good combination to get moving, you know? And I don't turn on my phone until all three of the steps are done, you know? And so that's where that picture was inspired from. Unfortunately, there's no more donuts. I don't think that was the healthiest breakfast. but the reading is still active and the coffee is still active. So
that's good. Yeah, I try to set myself a rule. I do my morning journal. I get my coffee and read a little bit. And I don't touch my phone until then. So I agree. If the first thing you do is reach for that phone, you might be in trouble. It's just a time waster that you can't escape. But if you at least get some things done before that, you feel productive and it might keep you off the phone a little bit after that. So I like that morning routine minus, like you said, minus the donut, but I'm no better. I get a donut a lot of mornings. I walk over to Dunkin' though. So I try to walk off the calories.
That's good. That's some really good incentive, you know, like. No, I was just bringing them home, you know, when you work there, they're free, which doesn't help you, you know?
So yeah. Goodness. Yeah. If I brought home 6 Dunkin' Donuts, there's no way that would last 6 days. It would last through the afternoon at best. So I admire your ability to even have them over the course of a few days. That's impressive.
Thank you. It was a double-edged sword, clearly. I realized very quickly that this wasn't very efficient at all. So I was you just got to cut that off.
Yeah, well, I admire the effort. And we're right at the end of our time. So before you go, could you tell everyone everywhere on the internet they could find you so they can find your podcast, find your YouTube, your Instagram, all that?
Yeah, sure. You can find everything under the name Precious Pioneer. I have a podcast called Precious Safudi, but I also have a sub podcast that recently launched a couple days ago called Precious Pioneer Audio Experience. So that's all of the special insights to different guests that I talk to and some blog post tutorials and different things like that. So it's been a lot of fun creating content in general. So you can just find everything underneath that name.
Excellent. And thank you so much for coming on. I'd love to have you back on because I have a lot more questions I'd like to ask about cooking. And as I mentioned, if we ever want to do a video, a live video show, I'm all in and my wife would love it as well.
Awesome. Thank you. Just shoot me your information. I'd love that opportunity to meet up again.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And hopefully we'll talk again soon.
No problem. Bye-bye. Have a good rest of your weekend.
You as well. Goodbye.